You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. I'm Anthony Kasterman. It's going to be joined by Jordan Bastian of MLB.com and talking about an Indians team that's still alive in that wild card hunt, maybe a little discouraged as anybody would be in that AL Central race, given what the Tigers did at the deadline, adding David Price. And the Indians were actually, you could label them sellers at the deadline, but I think they're illustrative of the vague gray area you can get into in today's game, where you can be a seller and probably be no less competitive than you were in their case. So let's bring in Jordan and talk about that. Jordan, what's your final takeaway from the trade deadline? They moved their starting shortstop, and they moved the guy who, going into the season, was their ace, essentially. And yet, you know, I don't think they're any less competitive now than they were before those moves. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I think that plays into it, the fact that you look at the roster in place and kind of the guy's performance this season. You kind of forecast to the off season, and I think it's pretty fair to assume that the Indians had made the determination that neither Nisdrubal Cabrera nor Justin Masterson were going to get, you know, a qualifying offer, which is approaching the $15 million range. So once you make that determination, you know, you've kind of reached that point where you know that they're going to basically walk and you're going to get nothing in return. So in order to get something in return, you trade them at the deadline. You get some salary relief in the case of Masterson. You know, with Nisdrubal Cabrera, the Indians are actually picking up the rest of the salary. And you get a couple of pretty highly touted prospects. So, you know, I think they did as well as they could have in terms of getting a upper-level prospect who is closer to reaching the big leagues than a compensatory draft pick would have been over the offseason, you know, had they gone through the qualifying offer route. So in that respect, I think the Indians did as well as they could. But I think where the disappointment rests from the fan base, you know, is the fact that they did not add, where this was a team that was, as you said, sort of in that gray area, trying to balance both selling and buying, and getting a starting pitcher seemed pretty imperative. And, you know, I'd be willing to bet they tried pretty hard, you know, going after a guy like John Lackey. You know, they probably weren't willing to match the type of package that Boston got for him. I'm sure they checked in on, you know, Tommy Malone, a guy like that. So, you know, they were trying to get a starting pitcher, just weren't able to get it done. And I do think that's where, you know, maybe some fans had frustration, not necessarily trading Masterson and Cabrera, but the fact that they weren't able to, you know, complement the starting staff with the big league club in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of speaks for itself. For Lackey, the Red Sox got two major league bodies, which is, I think, more than most people would have expected. But he did have that favorable contract for next season, so I'm sure that played into it. But, you know, from the Indians' perspective, for those who don't know, they moved Cabrera, and they got Zach Walters, a middle infielder with some pop. They got James Ramsey, an outfielder who can pretty much play any of the three positions in the outfield, and they saved a few million bucks there in moving Masterson. But, you know, Jordan, we've called Masterson an ace, or at least I have. I think by default, you know, he was kind of the leader of that staff. Maybe it wasn't always shown in the statistics, but guys really gravitated towards him. And but now you got Corey Kluber, who is really living up to the ace billing from a statistical perspective. Second only to Felix Hernandez in wins above replacement this season, which is pretty impressive stuff. Talk about you've seen this guy develop from really just a depth piece to really the frontline starter of the staff. What's been your perception of how he's made that growth so quickly here these last couple of years?
It's been incredible to watch, because really a couple of years ago, I mean, he just seemed like one of those stopgap, you know, I wouldn't even call him a prospect, just one of those minor leaguers that, you know, they had a hole on the staff. He could come up, be serviceable, fill in. And you didn't really anticipate this type of, you know, rapid growth, especially if you remember. I mean, there was a season where he couldn't get out of the first inning. You know, he seemed afraid to throw his off-speed stuff, and it was a pretty big topic about how he was going to overcome that hurdle. But, you know, he worked really hard as a minor leaguer, adding a two-seamer to his repertoire in the Indian system. You know, that really opened up the door for his other stuff to play. You know, his slider has been one of the best pitches in the game this season. And, you know, I don't like throwing the word ace around. I still, if you read my stuff, we'll call him a rotation leader. I think a guy's got to do it over a few seasons before I, you know, I'm willing to call him an ace. But he's a clear number one. He's an ace in the making. And he's a guy that, you know, last time out, I think he went into the eighth inning, gave up a run, and just watching him, it looked like he was struggling. And that's a great outing. And I think that's where he's reached at this point now where, you know, if it's not into the eighth or potentially going for a complete game, if he gives up a couple runs, if he's walked a guy or two, you're wondering what's wrong with him. And I think that says a lot over how far this guy's come.
It really is amazing. I mean, a few years ago in the minors, the pitches that he's throwing probably 60-70% of the time now, he didn't even have back then. The two-seamer
right.
that you mentioned, and the breaking ball, what do you call it, a slider, a curveball, whatever you want to call it. You know, that's something that's also developed here more recently. He used to be more of a four-seam and changeup kind of guy. So, incredible maturation from Corey Kluber. One that, you know, looking at the rest of the rotation, they obviously took Josh Tomlin out and really stunning decline from him from that, you know, goes from that one hitter in Seattle to 7.09 ERA over the four starts that followed that. I know Carrasco is still a possibility to pan out there over time, but he really seemed to be thriving in that bullpen role. So how do you think that all shakes out in the long run?
Well, I think it was interesting in early to mid-July, when we had a sit-down with GM Chris Antonetti, and we asked him about Carrasco in the bullpen, because just it's drastic when you look at the splits between him as a starter and him as a reliever over the last two seasons. He's been incredible out of the bullpen, and a lot of that, you know, I think has to do with the mental aspects of just going out there and attacking when you know you're not going to see a lineup. You're not going to turn a lineup over two or three times. You're only going to see it maybe once, you know, in the long roll that he's in. So, but one thing Antonetti said was, you know, while they're very encouraged by his work as a reliever, you know, the organization hasn't closed the door on considering him a potential starter in the future. I mean, and you look at his stuff, you look at his build, and he is a guy that looks like a 200-inning type starter. It just hasn't panned out. So that's something that they always know, you know, could be a possibility. Again, you know, you've removed Masterson from the equation. Tomlin's now in the bullpen. McAllister clearly has things to still sort out in the minor leagues. So you're cutting into that depth chart and now pointing to the 28-man bullpen that Francona has going in at any time. Carrasco's down there, and he's been stretched out. You know, he's had outings where he goes 3-4 innings, goes over 50 pitches. So it is an interesting part of the schedule right now. You know, there's off days in August where they could conceivably go with a four-man staff. There's a couple spots where they would need a fifth guy. And you would think Carrasco would be that possibility, especially if he's following a guy like Kluber, who's pitching deep into the game, saving the bullpen some work. So I don't think it's something that they're ruling out in the short term or in the long term, but it has been really impressive what he's done in the bullpen. He's really found a home there.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, you put a guy in a position where he does find success, and then, but yeah, there's that temptation there with his stuff. But his struggles, second time through the order, were definitely well documented in previous starting endeavors. So we'll see how that all pans out. Jordan, another thing going on with the Indians, a big thing, has nothing to do with what's going on the field. It has to do with the stadium itself, with these renovations they announced this week. And really, this is exciting stuff. I mean, this is going to totally reimagine, reinvent that ballpark in a lot of ways. And it's a ballpark that's 20 years old. Hard to believe it's 20 years old, but it's aged pretty well. But it seems like they're really targeting their fans in a different way, more gathering spaces as opposed to focusing on the seats and suites. It seems like they're really focused on more community-oriented gathering spaces like a bar or a kid's clubhouse and things of that nature. Have you I don't know how closely you've gotten to look at the renderings or whatnot, but what was your takeaway from what they're doing over there?
Well, my first takeaway is that they've announced that they're adding a Larry Doby statue as part of the reinvention, as you say, and yeah, I think that's great, and I think that's long overdue. And I think it also, you know, it was brought up again when they revealed the Jim Thome statue this season. You know, why isn't there a Larry Doby statue? Well, now there's going to be one. And to me, there's no controversy with a Jim Thome statue now, because before it was just Bob Feller, just Jim Thome. Now you add a third icon to that mix, and I think it eliminates any controversy, and I think it also opens up the door for more, you know, more in the future potentially, and kind of have one of those cool little statue rows potentially that you see other teams do. The kids' clubhouse is going to be great. I know my son, you know, when I take him to a game, he's almost five. That's the first thing he wants to do is go up to the kids' clubhouse. And, so seeing that they're going to revamp that, I know that's going to be a big hit in my house. And also just seeing the renderings, it is true that when you're over by the Feller statue, it's so blocked off from the field, almost like, you know, you got to be inside. You got to get a ticket if you want to see the field. And, you know, I don't, that's not necessarily fair to people who are visiting the city or, you know, people who are wandering and want to go check out the field. And so it's kind of cool to see that idea that this will be a more open space with more sweeping views and things like that. I mean, it's pretty exciting to see some of the ideas that they had and, you know, to see some of the renderings. And it's going to be really interesting to see the execution of it and see what it looks like next season.
Yeah, it's going to have some really unique viewpoints. You'll be able to, in the bar area, you'll be able to go down to the field level, basically where the visitor's bullpen is now, and you'll be able to watch the game from where the current visitor's bullpen is, which is pretty cool. And the bullpen
I found it interesting that they announced they're changing up the bullpens a couple days after Jumbo Diaz let that ball fly out of the bullpen.
That was poor timing. They could have had that maybe a week earlier would have helped them quite a bit on that particular play. But yeah, the bullpens will be out beyond the right center field wall, and you'll be right on top of them if you're a fan in that area. It's very cool. I don't know how the guys in the bullpen will feel about that, especially the guys from visiting teams. They might have some issue with that that arrangement, don't you think?
Yeah, you see that in other stadiums though, where the fans are almost right on top of those relievers while they're warming up.
Yeah.
You know, and that is kind of cool. They can, interact with them. And, you know, I know some of the relievers will talk to them back and things like that. So I know it's kind of an interesting element. And it'll definitely be, with the way Cleveland fans are, it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, we'll be excited for that. And more importantly, in the immediate, we'll see how the Indians continue to fare, both in that AL Central race and the wild card race. I want to thank Jordan Bastard for joining us. I want to thank you for tuning in. This is Anthony Cashman, and this has been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition.